I'm Lizzie O'Leary, host of the podcast What Next TBD for Slate. I'm in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. You've been hearing for weeks that there's a shortage of COVID-19 tests across the country, and this shortage is not allowing us to see the full scale of the pandemic. But the tests that are being administered may also be contributing to an undercount of COVID-19 cases. Medical professionals are reporting that the most common type of test is providing false negative results, meaning people are testing negative for the disease when they're actually positive. These tests are administered by a medical professional, and they push a swab through your nose way into the back of your throat. And it's pretty uncomfortable. Trust me, I know. I had symptoms the second week of March, and because I'm higher risk, I'm pregnant, and I have an autoimmune disease, I got a test from my primary care doctor. And they really shove that swab up there, and it hurts. I am okay, by the way. I ended up having the flu. As for the overall testing efficacy, one widely cited study from China reports that up to 1 in 3 people given the test can turn up a false negative result. And this can be a problem because people who believe they may not have it can spread the illness to others, and it prevents us from accurately tracing its spread. I spoke with Dr. Priya Sampath-Kumar about this. She's the medical director of infection prevention and control at the Mayo Clinic. I also spoke with Dr. Danielle Ofri, an attending physician at Bellevue Hospital and a clinical professor of medicine at the NYU School of Medicine. They told us that the false negative results aren't necessarily about the accuracy of the test, but a host of other factors, including best practices for administering it. I asked Dr. Ofri to describe what this common test looks like and how they're administered.
So we're using the PCR test, which is looking at the RNA of the virus, and we do it with a nasopharyngeal swab, which is a Q-tip that goes in the nose way, way back to the throat. And we've had a few variations on the test of where we send it, different outside labs. We also do an in-house test, and the turnaround time varies depending on where the sample is processed.
Have you or other doctors had patients where you suspect you got a false negative, or maybe they tested positive after initially getting a negative test?
At this point, I would say early in the pandemic, it was more of an issue. Now, when the patients have the symptoms, we treat them as though it's COVID, no matter what the test shows. And it's almost not necessary other than keeping track. It's more of the asymptomatic or less symptomatic people at home, where there's a false negative matters more.
Dr. Sampath-Kumar, what are you hearing about the rate of false negatives coming from these kinds of tests?
We know that no test is perfect, and generally most tests do have some level of false negative tests. This has sort of become more striking with COVID because we are seeing patients who present with very classic symptoms and radiographic x-ray evidence of COVID, and they are testing negative. And because we don't believe that they don't have COVID, we're retesting them and are finding positives on our subsequent testing. And then in people who don't have a lot of symptoms, it's more likely that we're missing some cases because they don't have as much virus, the test doesn't pick it up. So it's hard to know how many false negatives we have, but we suspect that we are seeing some.
This is sort of complicated because a lot of these tests were created by state labs, different labs, under what's known as an emergency use authorization from the FDA. So we're not talking about one standard test. And I guess I'm wondering, Dr. Sampath-Kumar, are we seeing false negatives because we have varied tests or because people are getting samples collected at early times when they don't have a big viral load? What's behind this?
It's probably a combination of all of those. So at my institution, all the tests are done by the same lab, which is our in-house lab. So the test variation isn't a problem for us. But collecting a nasopharyngeal swab can be a problematic. Patients have to cooperate for you to insert the swab, get to the back of the throat.
Yeah, I had one. It's really like you're going up to someone's brain.
Yes, it does feel like that. So getting the sample can be tricky. The other thing is the virus we think is in highest levels in the upper airway in the early part of the disease. So if you're testing someone who's had symptoms for a while, it could be that the nasopharyngeal swab is not the best sample. Maybe we should be getting samples from lower down in the respiratory tract, like the lungs. Then how it's transported to the lab, how long it takes to get to the lab can also play into the false negative issue.
Dr. Ofri, what has your experience been like with performing these tests? And I guess when you see them at Bellevue, has there been a learning curve for administering them correctly?
Yes, if you haven't been comfortable sticking a swab way in, I think people in the beginning are a little bit gun-shy and maybe are doing nasal swabs instead of nasopharyngeal swabs. Again, if the viral load is high, it's not a problem. But if the viral load is not as high, you may not get it there. But again, you know, when we measured sensitivity and specificity, that's based on a gold standard of diagnosis, and we don't yet have that. So all these numbers that we hear about, it's really hard to interpret them because we, you know, normally, for example, we, in another disease, we may do it against a biopsy where we can see the, you know, the infectious agent, but here we don't have that. So the numbers vary quite a bit. Is it 65% sensitive, 75%? We really don't know because we don't have a gold standard.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking, Dr. Ofri, of something like, say, breast cancer, where if you get a mammogram that's just a little bit concerning, they immediately have you back for another one. And a false negative is not as big a deal in a scenario like that. I guess I wonder how that compares to a scenario where we're concerned about transmission here.
Again, it depends which setting. In the inpatient setting at this point, if they have the symptoms, they have COVID no matter what the test shows, and the test in essence is less relevant. It's really relevant as an outpatient, and particularly for people who live in homes with more than one person. If you live alone and you have symptoms, we just tell you to isolate no matter what the test says. But what if you live in a family of five? To self-isolate with a family, especially if you have small children, is very hard. So telling someone to do that when they don't have it is quite a burden. And not having them do that when they do have the disease is also concerning because they can transmit the illness to other family members.
Does avoiding contamination worry you at all when you're juggling a lot of patients and tests? Or is that kind of moot because at Bellevue, the people you're seeing are very sick?
In the inpatient, you're usually doing one person at a time. In the outpatient, in the beginning, we were doing two separate tests for flu and for COVID. So two different swabs, two different vials, and we were cohorting family. So I had several situations of two patients, each with two tubes. So it's four tubes, four swabs, all in one room, everyone masked. And so it was a little complicated, and I worried about mixing them up. And of course, the print on the labels is very small, and you've got a mask on, and it's in bags. And so we had to be very careful. But I think now we're more streamlined. It's one swab for everything and one patient at a time. So it's, in fact, easier. And I think it's no more an issue than any other lab test that we do.
Dr. Sampathkumar, when we're talking about PCR tests, polymerase chain reaction tests, they are sort of the gold standard for a lot of things, for flu, for HIV. Is there any data that coronavirus PCR tests produce more false negative than other widely used PCRs, or am I kind of off on a tangent?
So as Daniel was saying, there's very little information on what the rate of false negative tests is. So for coronavirus, the answer is no. Other similar kinds of tests have similar issues. So the influenza PCR, for instance, is also not perfect. We have learned to sort of live with some degree of uncertainty. You know, it's important to take the whole context into consideration. So like Dr. Ofri was saying, if the patient has definite symptoms and is ill enough to be hospitalized, the negative test doesn't mean the patient doesn't have COVID. But I think that we're probably going to be using the same kind of technology going forward.
I'd like to ask you about antibody tests and sort of the possibility of using them as a detection tool when we think about them from a public health standpoint. How long do they take and how accurate are they compared to a PCR test for coronavirus?
The problem with using an antibody test for diagnosis is that it takes several days. We think somewhere on the order of about 10 days for the antibodies to first appear in the blood after you've had COVID infection. So it's not going to be very helpful to diagnose an infection, it will be very useful from the public health standpoint to see what proportion of a population that you're studying has already had the infection.
Dr. Ofri, knowing that there is this chance of false negative in a clinical setting, how are you treating patients now? And I guess, how will you be treating patients if New York hopefully sort of gets to this place where maybe some of the people you see are a little less sick than some of the incredibly ill people coming to the hospital?
For patients who have symptoms, if you have a cough, a fever, or you're short of breath, or loss of taste and smell, or sore throat at this point, we're treating as COVID no matter what the test says. And so we advise them to isolate for at least 7 days and at least 3 days without symptoms before venturing out. If someone has no symptoms, but let's say hasn't had an exposure, that's a trickier situation. Because again, those recommendations can be quite onerous.
Yeah.
And so again, it depends on what their exposure has been. If, you know, a coworker three offices over was diagnosed positive, that's not such a big deal. If they're a healthcare worker working in a hot zone, we consider it much more likely, even if the test is negative, and they might want to isolate for a week before they return back to work.
Dr. Sampath Kumar, when we think about the other side of the curve and hopefully getting there, are there things that doctors and sort of healthcare systems should be doing to ensure that false negatives don't contribute to the greater spread of the virus and maybe that curve inching up again?
The false negatives become more significant when you have limited cases in the community. That's when knowing what the false negative rate is would be very helpful. What we need to continue to do is all the common sense things, what we call standard precautions in healthcare. When you're seeing a patient who you have contact with their secretions, make sure you're wearing gloves, wearing eye protection and a mask. In the social setting, make sure you continue to do social distancing and cover your cough when you're coughing or having any symptoms.
Dr. Priya Sampath Kumar is the Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control at the Mayo Clinic, and Dr. Danielle Ofri is an attending physician at Bellevue Hospital and author of the forthcoming book, When We Do Harm, A Doctor Confronts Medical Error. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We asked you to share your experience with coronavirus testing by calling us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
Arlene from Tampa, Florida. Back in March, I had symptoms that could have been the coronavirus, but there weren't any tests available. Now I'd like to know whether I actually had it or not. They were pretty mild, but I had it for about 3 weeks where I was running a fever and cough and feeling very fatigued. I did stay home and self-quarantine. I have been at home since then.
Hi, this is Marina Abbott calling from Sonoma, California. And I was able to get tested last Monday after returning from Spain. I do have a pre-existing condition and had some minor symptoms that could have been COVID. Luckily, I tested negative.
Hi, this is Will from St. Paul. I've had two friends who were diagnosed via telehealth, but were not able to actually get tested. They were told to come back if their lips or fingers turned blue, otherwise to just stay home.
Thanks for your stories, and we always want to hear from you at 877-8-MY-TAKE. More coming up. Stay with us on The Takeaway.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.